A terrible dilemma. And I learned this morning that Rabbi Lehm has not slept for nights. So you understand, when it comes to an issue of homosexuality, I want you to understand something clearly. Rabbi Lehm may not be a friend of the Haredi world. And it may very well be that his attack and his famous speech, Centrist Orthodoxy, it may be, you may take the position that it was not necessary. I, for one, have always felt that nothing was accomplished, you understand, by attacking them on that level. We have to live our life and create Torah and Yirat Shemayim, and that's the greatest attack in the world, that the YU world creates the greatest Gedolei Torah. That's the greatest attack on the right wing. One Reb Heschel Shechta is worth a million words, in my opinion. But I want to explain something to you. Students have a habit of misunderstanding. And Rabbi Lehm is a Torah Jew, so don't misunderstand. Don't confuse the fact that he's anti-Haredi, as many people say. And on this issue of homosexuality, Rabbi Lehm is very upset. It's only miyotzri, only miyotzri. Right now, it's a very difficult to find a solution. And the problem is very simple. The background, there are two versions of the background. One version is that at the graduation of, or at some commencement or convocation of the law school, Kadoza, either a student or a professor, I've heard two different versions, got up and made a speech all about the greatness of Kadoza, that they allow a homosexual club. And of course, he said this in public in front of Rabbi Lehm. This engendered tremendous controversy. The commentator challenged Rabbi Lehm to close down the homosexual clubs or lose his validity as a Rosh Yeshiva and why he was an Orthodox institution. Rabbi Lehm is in a catch-22 situation for obvious reasons. The Civil Liberties Union already announced that if they close down the homosexual clubs in Einstein and Condoza, they're going to go to court, and YU is no longer eligible for any government grants, whether they're state or federal. So you're dealing here with tens of millions of dollars annually. Of course, as you all know, as of late 69, Yeshiva Shulchanim is no longer a part of Yeshiva University. The two institutions are chartered separately, and that was done on purpose so that the yeshiva would be free of governmental pressure or governmental requirements when receiving money. And that was done purposely. At the time, there was a lot of opposition. Some of you may know this. Rabbi Soloveitchik was opposed. There was Jeffrey Silver. Of course, to you already, it's ancient history. To me, it happened just yesterday. There was a lot of opposition. It was the one time that the Rav spoke publicly against Rabbi Belkin, and it was at the 1970 Chag HaSmicha. Nevertheless, Rabbi Belkin assured the Rav that it was being done for the good of the yeshiva, the best interest of the yeshiva. And time has shown that, Hillel and Naftali, please come closer, time has shown that to be correct. However, right now, and it's very hard to explain. You see, what's happened here is Rav Shachnow has issued a cheirim against going to the OU convention because Rabbi Lehm is one of the honorees at the OU convention, and Rabbi Lehm has a homosexual club in his yeshiva. Of course, it's very hard to explain to an Israeli that it's not the yeshiva, it's a graduate school. The graduate school is non-sectarian. Nuns can go to the graduate school. Priests can go to the graduate school. The graduate school is funded by federal money, by state money. It's very hard to explain this to an Israeli. And Rabbi Lehm is in a terrible quandary. And this is what I know as of the moment on that particular question. The reason everyone was talking about in the state of Israel is because it was the lead article in Yom HaShishi. Yom HaShishi, no newspaper has succeeded like Yom HaShishi. It is a weekly religious newspaper that has all the gossip in the yeshiva world. Rabbi Miller is shaking his head with approval. It is, Rabbi Miller, will you know what the word means? Rabbi Miller was just in, don't get excited. It's not his ghost. It's a tsahuvon. It's a yellow sheet. And this week, everyone was calling everyone. I got already, maybe, I don't know how many calls I got Thursday. Did you see Yom HaShishi? What, Rabbi? Are you going to the OU convention? And it goes on and on. But please don't think that Rabbi Lehm, God forbid, is in favor of homosexual clubs. He's caught in a very difficult position. I don't want to be a big shot and say if I were president of YU, I would do this, because I don't know what's involved. If 50 Orthodox Jews got up and said, Rabbi Lamb, if you close down the homosexual club, we're each going to give $500,000 a year, which we never gave before. Could be I close it down in a second flat. But, you know, that doesn't take much insight. But where you have a position of X millions of dollars and you stand in fear of losing it all, it's a difficult problem. And believe me, you all know my attitude to homosexuality. It's the greatest crime in the world that we face today with AIDS and homosexuals, etc. And you all know that. I tell all my students, if I be a Rebbe teaching younger kids, believe me, not the way my Rebbe said, Kuk nicht under Meidlach, pardon my French God, my would tell my children, my boys, Kuk under Meidlach, look at the girls, because Chas v'Chalila, you shouldn't look at the girls. That's one. Two, I was asked to comment on Rabbi Berlwein's the lead article in the latest Jewish Observer on Das Torah. So I want to tell you I have two comments. The reason people ask me to comment, some of you know that over the years I've given some major lectures on Das Torah. I have a lot of material on the topic. I haven't published, but that's simply because I refuse to publish on Hashkafic issues, because I think I'm smart enough to know that today's New York Times is fresh and 2 weeks later you find it in the garbage. Today I have to pay $2 for the Sunday Times, as Larry knows. And a week from now, that same Sunday New York Times, Valdez is in garbage, you can pull it out of the garbage for nothing. Hashkafa changes like women's fashions. So I'm not one to publish on Hashkafa, because I want what I publish to be read 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now. I also suffer from what the Rav talks about so much, Akiva, Akiva, come close, what the Rav talks about so much that a human being wants to be remembered. So I want to publish what I publish, I consider serious. But two comments on the article. Number one, either there's intellectual dishonesty at the start or ignorance, meaning Rabbi Wein quotes the Rav's Hesped of Rav Chaim Weizer. However, a footnote should have been there. Yeah, why don't you come closer? A footnote should be there that the Rav changed his mind. That has been a Rav Chaim Meiser. The Rav changed his mind. He was no longer not did this. Look into Yosef V'Yachav. And not only that, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein at the Hesped that he gave at the Shloshim in Yeshurin said openly that the Rav changed his mind. And Rabbi Aaron's Hesped was published in Hamasorah. So please don't quote the Rav's Hesped on Rav Chaim Meiser, which is a classic, a good of Israel position, without putting in a footnote that unfortunately Rabbi Soloveitchik later changed his mind and he was no longer an Agudist, but he said this during his Aguda period. He leaves you with the impression the Rav never changed his mind. To me, that's intellectually dishonest. I cannot believe that he is not aware of Avraham Lichtenstein's Hesped and the Sorah published by the OU, and that he's not aware of Chamesh Drashot, but that's one comment. The other comment is, and this Zev was absolutely right, and I said the same thing, that the Das Torah that he's talking about is a straw man. It's not the old Das Torah. In other words, the original Das Torah of the Jewish Observer, if you go back to Bernard Weinberger's classic statement on Das Torah, it's slightly less than prophecy. Okay, Rabbi Wein's Das Torah is what I would call Keta HaTorah. I'll deal with it later this year when I deal with the Brisk and the Rav and the Brisk of Chiddush. And believe me, I believe with all my heart that a great Talmud Chacham has a certain Keta Torah. But the minute Beryl Wein is willing to say there can be more than one of Das Torah, then already Das Torah is not Das Torah, and I have no problem signing on the dotted line to the rest of the article outside of the misrepresentation of the Rav. So that's my comment on the article. Yes, Reuven. Yeah, that's true too. I agree with you that in addition, but once he's willing to agree that there will be more than one Das Torah, and Das Torah is a certain feeling that enhances, that comes with great learning, etc., at that point, we agree wholeheartedly. Imposed, not imposed, you're absolutely right, this is a question of chinuch, and whether you learn by the Rav, or whether you march to a different tune, now's not the time to go into it. But I agree with you 100%, but his definition of Das Torah is no longer the classic Jewish Observer definition. You understand? They've backed down 1,000%, because whether they like Larry Kaplan's article or not, and he bitterly attacks Larry Kaplan, but one thing is certain, anyone who has researched the topic, the concept of Das Torah as a Gura propagandized it in the 20th century does not exist before the 20th century. And frankly speaking, I'm not a chassid. You can invent Hasidus in the 1700s if you're a Chassid. You can invent Das Torah in the 1900s if you're a Chassid. I'm not a Chassid. What's there in Shas and Poskim is there. What some Johnny come lately made up because it fit him, that's shocking to me. And also, I have to say, if you look at Das Torah, I hate to say it, but every major decision a good Israel made in the 20th century turned out to be wrong. Every major decision. They were opposed to Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel before Mashiach. They testified before the League of Nations, the Peel Commission, the Mixed Armistice Commission, the London Anglo-Saxon Inquiry. Mr. Harry Goodman, time and again, was opposed. Leave Palestine for the Arabs. Let the Jews live under Arab rule. Could you imagine where we'd be today if there wouldn't be a state of Israel following the Holocaust? And so I'm saying, Reuven, so let's look at every issue. Then they took the attitude that you don't belong to the government, you stay out of the government after the first government. Look what happened here because Aguda wasn't in the government. Then they created Shas. From this point on, you have to rip Kriya. Every minute you speak is another Kriya. I'm not wealthy enough to go further. I don't have enough shirts to rip today. Let it be here. So when you talk about Das Torah, I'm not overly overwhelmed by the Das Torah of Aguda Israel because every move they made turned out to be a chet v'pesha for Am Yisrael. Shem Yerachem. We have here the most irreligious government ever in the history of the Jewish people, more irreligious than Achav. At least Achav loved the state of Israel. I refer to the Yerushalmi. At least Achav loved the land of Israel. At least Achav loved every Jew. There were no deleterium in the time of Achav. We have a more irreligious government than Achav and Izevel, and that's an achievement, and it was created by a good of Israel. And remember, again, a good of Israel? Shas? Yes! But who created Shas? Who created Degel HaTorah? Is your memory so short that you forgot what happened 12, 13 years ago? After all, one thing that we learn from Torah is that we have a memory that begins with Avram Avinu and goes to Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's the one thing I got from my Rebbe that I got out of Torah. I never live in the present. You understand what I'm saying? Oh no, we're opposed to the government. What do you mean you're opposed? You created the government. If I would have been in a goodness, I would have left and ripped Kriyas 100 times over. Understand? Oh yeah, we forgot what happened. You forgot what happened in 81, in 82, in 83. Oh, that's ancient history. That must be the Roman Greek period. But anyway, that Das Torah that he talks about with the Keter Torah, fine, believe me, I can elaborate. I'd like to believe that the people I know, that they're not just Talmid Chachamim, but they have a certain gestalt and a certain understanding and a certain vision. Believe me, the Rebbe used to say, I don't have Ruach HaKodesh. The Rebbe would say time and again. But that the Rav had Keter HaTorah, that the Rav had insight, that, of course, absolutely. Okay, now, today we have very fascinating material. First of all, when all is said and done, we see that going into the 1600s, the world was rapidly changing. Chuppah v'kedushin was all together. The concept of shidduchim erusin, I showed you the tshuvot last week. No one could have any doubt about it that they... I didn't show you. No, that's what I have to show you today. I'll come to it today. But the world was rapidly changing. And everything was done, chuppah v'kedushin were done together. The big difference was that in Poland and in Russia, no one in the world ever dreamt of being mafkir kedushin. There, it seemed that they accepted the psak of the Rama, the Mashal. We can't do it. Whatever the reasons are, the time of the Gemara, they could do it. But like the Mashal says, nowadays, there are so many people that we don't know, that so many batei dinim that we can't depend upon. There's no focal beitin. We absolutely can't do it. Now, because the times are changing and because of 1648 and the massacres, so I ended off the class and I showed you in the Pinchas Litter, I gave you the source last week. In a minute I'll give you a similar source. So I showed you that now they had a new problem, that you simply had to know who you were marrying. People were traveling from community to community. It's not like times immemorial, like the Chafetz Chaim. I referred you to the Chafetz Chaim in the Likutei Halacha, which again, if you look up the source, it's an unbelievable source. It's actually, I think if you ever take children to see Fiddler on the Roof, Was that ever made into a movie, by the way? I'm just asking. Yeah, because I never saw it as a movie. But as a play, it's very powerful. I saw it before I left America. And if you ever take young people to see that play, read the Chafetz Chaim in Likutei Halacha. He really gives you the background for what was happening. And these were the shifting winds, and this is the way we live today. This is the way we've lived now for a few hundred years. This is what's happening to the Sephardic communities that come in Aliyah. You're caught up in a world where no one knows each other. We're thrown together willy-nilly. No one knows each one's parents, grandparents. And in this world, how do you know a person is single? Hey, no, and that's where you have to do the bidikah that they speak about. Now, that goes on until today. And this is important about a Rav in America. It's important here in the Rabbinate. As I explained to you how the Rabbinate works here, people are trained for this, a roshim, the suin, if not to a bait, and everything I explained is correct. And even with all these safeguards, you still have problems. But I just want to share with you one of the funniest problems of all. In the 1970s, where there weren't so many Americans here yet, so I once got a call from the Beit Din in Tel Aviv. And I said, what are they calling me? They're calling me to ask if Rabbi Schwab is reliable. So I say, Rabbi Schwab? Which Rabbi Schwab do you mean? Rabbi Shimon Schwab of Dr. Shurin in Washington Heights. I say, Rabbi Schwab, reliable? I said, I don't know if he's a great Zionist, but I would say he's a reliable Jew. So I said, why are you asking? So they said, well, we got this letter, this girl from Chutzlaz wants to get married, and they got this letter of Rav HaKuk, that she's a Rav HaKar, and he knows the family, and she's Jewish. And they looked into the RCA manual, and they looked into the Agudat HaRabbanim manual, and he's not listed among the rabbis. He wasn't evidently a member of RCA, he wasn't a member of Agudat HaRabbanim. Not listed in the two big Orthodox rabbinical organizations. I told them in America there are certain rabbis that are not listed, but you can rely upon them. So you see that they really were making an effort to check them out, and someone told them, I think it was from the army, I was already active in the army, and it was probably my commander in the army, said to them, check with Rav Rakefet in Yerushalayim. He'll know whether he's reliable or not. But those that are Batei Dinim, and that's checking out. It's common sense today. You cannot take anything for granted. You must check the problems of going to Grusha, going to a Giyoret, Rav HaKut, running away, leaving a wife in America, coming here, leaving a wife in Israel, going to America. You must check it out thoroughly. I just want to say in parentheses, and I can't stress this enough because it came up last night, and again, I get shocked when people reach your age and don't understand what Torah is all about. But again, I have to say to everyone in this class, all the young rabbis here, please be aware we live in two worlds. We live in a world of Western democracy, the pursuit of happiness, individual freedom, everything we speak about in the Tuesday class. We also live in a world of Torah. Chas v'chalila, we allow these values to clash. This is what Naseh v'nishma means. Naseh v'nishma means that our minds surrender to Torah. And as the Rav used to say time and again, even if we don't understand it, there has to be total surrender. And this is a coin to a Grisha. I was telling the story of problems of calling to Grisha, so some fellow makes a comment, well, it's not so terrible, you know, make a mistake, let them get married, they're in love. It's a terrible story. Calling to Grisha, the mind doesn't conceive. What's wrong? A calling to a Grisha. But it's an open love in the Torah. And with all our feeling for personal happiness, this is a tragedy. And I refer you to the Rub's talk of 1975, which has been widely publicized. It happens after many, many, many years. I finally came up with a crystal clear copy of that talk. You have no idea how many years it took me. I knew one had to exist, and I finally got to it. But there the Rub tells the famous story, which I've told 1,000 times. I repeat it now in context. So you should know why these bedikot are so important. The Rub tells an unbelievable story to an audience what happened to him of the story with this woman, a Catholic woman, went to university. In university, she did a report on Judaism. She got interested in Judaism, got more and more, and she reached the conclusion, Moshe Emet v'Torato Emet. And she gave up her religion, studied, converted, became a Shomeret Mitzvah. In graduate school, she met a Jewish boy from a totally assimilated home. She made the boy shrum. They got engaged. The boy goes to the cemetery. He gets all involved in his roots. He takes a picture of his grandfather's tombstone. And on the tombstone, he sees that it's a famous story, the fingers. Comes to his rabbi. What does this mean? The rabbi says, well, that's your father's father. He's a Kohen. You're a Kohen. You can't marry a Gioret. And of course, they came to the Rav. And the Rebbe said, I shared in their sorrow, I shared in their pain, but there was nothing I can do. He's a Kohen, she's a Gioret, and he said this woman was a great woman. She walked away, and she started all over again. And this I have to call your attention to, and this is why these bidikot are necessary. And a person, if we allow our emotion, our Western civilization, our concepts of fair play, of everyone being equal, of human, of pursuit of happiness, if we allow that to color our halachic thinking, then chas v'chalila, we are transgressing na'aseh v'nishma. And this, of course, is the conservative movement. When all is said and done, the conservative movement also professes that they believe in halacha. But they believe tradition and change. They believe in Catholic Israel. I don't have time to go into it now, but all of you understand. Accommodation. You have to accommodate religion to the transient civilization. That goes against the heart of what Na'aseh V'Nishma means. If I may quote the Rav, Na'aseh V'Nishma means to suspend judgment. Our judgment. We surrender. To judge it by the mind of the 1995s, Shem Yirachem, what our minds are worth. TV and radio and the New York Times and Life Magazine and Time Magazine and Ashtifat HaMoach, Hashem Yirachem. And this you have to remove completely when you approach Torah. And this is homosexuality, if I can go back to the way I began. What's wrong, after all, alternate lifestyles, personal sexual preference, I mean, just think. And once 50 million people say it, you start to think, wow, there's something the matter with me if I don't believe this. There's nothing the matter with us. This is anti-Torah, anti-humanity, anti-God's will. Cannot succeed. But part of democracy, I understand it very well. Pursuit of happiness, individual of freedom, I don't harm you, you don't harm me. AIDS can destroy the world, you don't harm me. Okay, now, I want to go one step further and say something else I had to look for. And this, too, takes us into a problem. I don't know of an earlier source with these bidikot, but this takes us into a problem which haunts us until today. How many of you have read... How many of you are familiar with Rabbi Yaakov Emden? Let me take anything for granted. How many of you know that Rabbi Yaakov Emden was extremely idiocentric for Gadol B'Yisrael? We spoke about before, Gadol Yisrael. He could not be a member of Agudat Israel today, let me assure you. Now, among his idiosyncrasies, I mean, I'm not now talking about his psakim. Some of his psakim were unbelievable, such as permitting he and his father, the Chacham Tzvi of Yaakov Emden, together, they wanted to permit kidneyot in Pesach. They wanted to permit pidlak shot. They had unbelievable viewpoints. But what else did he do that no one else did? No one else did. Unfortunately, we cry that no one else did it. And we'll talk about it Tuesday. You know, talk about it on Shia Tuesday. The Rav talks about it. What else did he do? Can anyone tell me? He wrote an autobiography. Can anyone tell me the name of the autobiography? Megillat Sefer. Have any of you ever read his autobiography? It's an unbelievable beginning to the to that autobiography. You pick up that, and you have to read, by the way, there's a censored edition and a non-censored edition. Are you aware of that, Binyamin? How do you know that? There are two editions. Yeah, there are two editions. It's an amazing thing. No, it's an amazing thing that, I mean, it's to me it's criminal, but it's an amazing thing, Abby, that over the years they couldn't live with the uncensored edition, and they wouldn't publish it all. Finally, in modern times, Avraham Shauli, again, you don't know who he is. Boy, the generation is moving on. I'm looking, I want to record for posterity. I'm looking at men who are on the average 25 years of age, and they don't know anything. Ribbono shel Olam, time is marched on. They just know Shas and Paiskim, nothing beyond. Who was Avram Shauli? One of the most interesting characters. Who was Reb Moshe Bick? Let's begin there. Can anyone tell me? Ezra, Reb Moshe Bick. Oh, Reb Moshe Bick was a YU graduate. His father was Reb Shaul Bick, who was the Rav of East New York, was a Gaon Adir, was my wife's grandparents' Rav in my home until today. There are certain things we do because Reb Shaul Bick passed in that way for my wife's grandparents. Reb Shaul Bick had a number of children, among them Reb Moshe Bick, who went to YU, was a, believe it or not, a YU graduate, went on to become the most famous Rav in the Bronx, then the Posek of Borough Park. He just died a few years ago, was a Gaon Adir. No one in the world would ever believe he was a YU graduate, but believe me, he was. Now, he had a number of brothers. One of the Ezra Bik, Rav Ezra Bik, the Rosh Yeshiva in Alon Shvut, is his nephew. He had another brother, Rav Avram Bik, who changed his name to Rav Avram Shauli in honor of his father. Rav Avram Shauli was the communist rabbi. He was the only rabbi in the world that I know of who was a Talmud Chacham, first-rate Talmud Chacham, first-rate scholar, frum, and he believed in communism. And this guy wrote articles supporting communism and supporting the Russian system and the social justice of the communist system. Unbelievable. He died in Israel a few years ago. He put out the true version of the Megillat Sefer. So be aware that the Shauli edition is the true version. Excuse me? I don't know if it's in print anymore. It was in print in the 70s. Yeah, his brother would have it. His brother lives in Yerushalayim. He has one. There's a brother that Baruch Hashem has for his father. And he lives here right next to... But say that, take it in Xerox. Now, the original edition, I think it's the Kahana edition, is the one with censorship. Now, what's amazing is how the volume begins. You know the way the volume begins? You won't believe your ears. The volume begins where Rabbi Yaakov Emden describes how he was almost a mamza. How is he almost a mamza? In the Gezerot Tach V'Tat, 1648, so the Cossacks, the Tatars, were fighting each other, the Poles, the Jews were caught in the field, Jonathan, and the Jews were being slaughtered like flies. So Hillel, on his grandmother got Eidut, that his grandfather was slaughtered. In other words, they said Eidut, that there was a pile of bodies, his grandfather was among them, absolutely dead. The grandmother got a Hetut to remarry. And do you know that right before she was going to remarry, the grandfather came back? And the story was the usual story, that he made believe he was dead, he was wounded, he didn't get up because he was afraid the Tatars would kill him. He remained there till nightfall, and nightfall he ran away from the pile of bodies, and he saved his life. He came back months later, a year, whenever it was, he writes in the book, months, a year later, whatever it was, and he imagined, had she remarried, what the state would have been of her future generations. Now, that already shows us that with the Khmelnytsky massacres, you have a tremendous problem of really establishing that a person is dead. And here you have it. Pinchas Medinat Lita. I'm quoting to you from page 102. I'm quoting to you from page 102. And I'm quoting on that page Siman Taf Samach Aleph. And this law was enacted Taf Samach Aleph. I see I made a mistake. I wrote Shin Samach Aleph in my notes. No, that's something else. Let me check. Yeah, no, Taf Samach Aleph. And this law was enacted right after the Khmelnytsky massacres and 1650. And it says, Kamala v'nigma k'yom hazeh achareya sheyesh l'chush rabbein shumim me'idim al harigat anashim al kein kol kilav v'yishuv muzharim v'yomdim l'mor ha'mishma l'hashgiach ba'otzim hashkacha shelot l'chtov t'rayim kavachome shelot l'sadeh kedushim l'shum almana עד שיהיה בידו כתב ראיה שהוא אלמן או מגורש, גם שלא הניחו לשום אורחים מגורשים להשתבח עם זה, אפילו בחורים ובתולות, אם לא יתבררו מי ומחם, למען לא יישא איש את קרובתו אסורה לו. And this is an unbelievable statement, that you not only have to check the general questions of Rav Akut and who you are and Kohen, but you have to be certain that the person can remarry. You have to be certain that the husband died. You have to be certain that he was killed. You have to be certain that proper testimony was taken. And you have to know, with Aguna, this is the greatest problem we face, because we're not Catholics. Catholics have a concept that the Pope can issue a dispensation. And Lahavdil Bein Tomei Lahatahar, But you all know very well that supposedly in Catholicism you're not allowed to get divorced, and yet many wealthy, famous people get a dispensation, they get divorced, the Pope can do things. It's an amazing thing, is power. Judaism doesn't work that way. You can go to the greatest Rabbanim in the world, and the Rabbanim can be mati that the woman can remarry. And they can have testimony that the man was lying among the dead bodies, and he's certainly dead. And if the guy comes back, all the heterim from the greatest Rabbanim in the world cannot alter the fact that her first husband has come back. And if that's the case, Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh, the Banam Amamzerim, it can even be from the first husband, if he lives with the first husband again, the children Amamzerim, the Rabbanim, the second husband's Amamzerim, the Oraita, she forfeits Haktuva, the penalties are unbelievable. And Chas V'Chalila Mamzerid is a stain on the family that can never be removed. Mamzer perpetuates itself ad viad. This is the great tragedy with Mamzerut. It's not like you say two generations, three generations. Ad dor asiri viad viad b'klal. Yilo yavo b'kal Hashem. So this is why one has to be very careful. Also, the whole problem of kirva. Again, once people are separated, once there's tragedy, how do you know who you're marrying? And this, by the way, during the Holocaust, you have no idea how many movies, how many drama series can be made on the tragedies that happened after the Holocaust. Right here in Israel, I always tell the story, right when we came in Aliyah, of the man who comes in from Argentina, the girl who comes in from Argentina in her 20s to spend the summer in Tel Aviv, and she meets a man about twice her age in Tel Aviv, and they have a fast romance. And as they're about to get engaged, she sends for her mother to come in from Argentina, and it turned out that the girl was about to get engaged to her own father. The Holocaust had separated the family. The story there is even more amazing, because the mother had gotten a heter to remarry, but sometimes it's hard enough to find a husband the first time, let alone a second time. She had not remarried. Miraculously, there was no problem with Mamzerut. But imagine the girl was about to marry her father. And that explains to us why she was going with an older man. She wanted a husband and a father figure. There's another case in Israel, the most famous case of all, which I'll only present the case. Jack knows I've given many lectures on it. The most famous case of all is the guy from Borough Park comes to visit. It's before the Six-Day War. Goes right, this case made the New York Times, goes right to Bnei Brak. That then, before the Six-Day War, he didn't come to Yerushalayim first. He came to Bnei Brak first. And on the streets of Bnei Brak, he meets his first wife. The only problem is she had remarried, had two kids in Panovich Yeshiva, and here is her first husband saying, "Nice to meet you." It's overwhelming. And there's nothing that a pope can do, you understand? You can't give a dispensation. You can't say it didn't happen. She had a heterim signed by the greatest Rabbanim, by Rabbi Shlomo David Kahane, by Isaac Levi Herzog, by the special Beitin, set up to be Mater Agunot after World War II in Israel. They were Mater thousands upon thousands of Agunot. And here you have a case where, what can you do? All the testimony was given, the man was taken away, the man was in Auschwitz, the man was here, the man was there. The man miraculously survived. And here the woman has remarried. So I don't have to tell you, these bedikot are so critical. You have to know what you're doing. Tamidei Chachamim, life is at stake here. Aguna, Mamzerut, Dinei Nefashot. Again, if I might quote Rakefet's witticism, it's not a shaila in Yom Tov Sheni. And I don't want to be mezazel on Yom Tov Sheni. You know that. But with Yom Tov Sheni, not the end of the world. Watch your paskin. One day, 2 days, a day and a half, 2 days putting on tefillin secretly. Not the end of the world. Watch your paskin. Like the Rav, like Rav Shechter, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, like Rav Moshe, like Rav Shlomo Goren, like Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook. With Banish Shalom, not the end of the world. Watch your paskin. But Mamzeret, Eishetish, Aguna, the heart of Torah, Dinim D'Oraita, Tarat Mishpachar, in the sense of family pedigree, I can't think of more difficult questions. And this is what the Takana was made in 1650. And why then 1650? Because now, following the Chmielnytskyi massacres, the Jews in Poland and Russia had these problems for the first time. Until now, Hillel L'Refua Shlema, until now, it's sprained or broken? Sprained R'Fuah Shlema. As someone who knows what broken fingers are all about, unfortunately. And now for the first time, Avi, they have this problem. What do you do? how do you solve it? And at least be bodek as best as you can. Now, in summarizing all that happened from this period, from the middle of... Yes, Scott. Yes, Scott. His son-in-law, Reb Zalman Chaim Goldberg. Yeah, I know who you're referring to. Reb Shlomo Zalman's son-in-law. Right. Well, what you're referring to, of course, is Vlo Yova Mansa Bakal Shem, the Gemara Sari Yuchs, and Sofek Mamsal Yovo, Bakal Vaday La Yovo, Bakal Sofek Ken Yovo. There is what we call Hatarat Mamzerim, there is what we call to be Matam and Aguna. All these problems I raised tonight may have solutions, but those solutions involve hundreds of hours of lectures, and I will give them in the future. It's not for tonight. I just want you to be aware of the problems. But the fact that there may be solutions, these are not happy solutions, not easy solutions. It's dinei nefashet. I mean, if I can show you in modern times, the most horrendous problem of all that happened in Israel. And this problem too made all the newspapers. And it happened. It's a real problem. In this class, how many of you were conceived artificially? Raise your hands. So, of course, basically speaking, even if you were conceived artificially, you don't know whether you were or not. Generally speaking, if you were, no one's going to tell you. Your mother is not going to tell you. Your father's, the person who you think your father is, certainly not going to tell you. So now, let me tell you a little story that happened. In Be'er Sheva, a boy and a girl fell in love and wanted to get married. Miraculously, they found out. And remember, when you go out with a girl, when you go out with a boy, one of the first questions you ask yourselves, what do we have in common? What do we have in common? Now, I'm a little turned off by that question, because the truth is, a boy and a girl should have nothing in common. She should be a girl and you should be a boy. And Dafka, the fact that you're opposites, that's the way it has to begin. But today's generation thinks it's smarter than their parents and grandparents. I don't think they're smarter. The percentage of the, if I may quote the Rav said, when we got married to Shidduchim, somehow we had much happier marriages. You do it on your own, and you have a lot more failures than we did. And he's absolutely right. But in today's generation, the children think they're smarter than the parents, smarter than the Rebbe. So the first thing you do, you got with a girl, what do I have in common? What do we have in common? Now, could you imagine if you share the same father, how much you have in common? Believe it or not, you have the same sense of humor. You have the same character makeup. You have the same frame of reference, willy-nilly, without even knowing that. Do you know? Well, you may have the same nose, that's correct as well, and that also attracts. Gentlemen, this boy and girl had the same father. They were both conceived by artificial insemination at the same time, and in Be'er Sheva at that time there was only one donor. He was a medical student, and they knew, people knew, and it was an unbelievable... Now, can you imagine... That shidduch was broken off. Could you imagine a little country like Israel with AID? Can you understand what the problems can be? So you see, with all the bedikah in the world, we still cannot totally seal these problems. And that was a real problem. It happened here. And now you understand Rav Moshe's gadlut, when Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Paskin, at AID... only outside of Israel, only where it's Rov Goyim, so that there's no possible relationship between the person you're going to marry when it's Zera Shel Goy, even if it's a brother and sister, but that has no relevancy. They're not Jews, it doesn't count. But you can understand. On the other hand, look at the problem that creates if you're taking Zera Shel Goy, you go to Munich, Germany, they have a hospital there that's a square block. It's the biggest hospital in the world for artificial insemination. Their rate of success is something like 83-85%. They don't let you leave till they've done it, and they do every test when the woman is fertile, when they should inject her. It's an unbelievable system. And for all you know, the woman, a nice Jewish girl from Yerushalayim, is being fertilized with the sperms of the son of a Nazi commandant who killed 500,000 Jews in Auschwitz. You understand what I'm saying? So now think about this problem, and when you think what influences a kid, the whole, your first course in Psychology 1, is it environment or is it hereditary factors? Okay? Think about that problem. So here you see where we have the most difficult problems in the world, halachically, morally, ethically, hashkafically, it's in Dinei Ishut. Now, during this period, and this is when I started the class with, I worked so hard preparing this class that I thought in my own mind, I had already said these lectures. I now realize that this is what I was preparing twice during last week. I worked everything out. So now during this period, from the middle of the Rishonim, through 1648, Tachvatat, because following Tachvatat, Jewish power, Jewish life takes a nosedive in the Ashkenazic world, and to a certain degree in the Sephardic world. It was a very difficult period following the expulsion from Spain and Portugal. But during this period, one thing has been accomplished beyond any question of a doubt. There is nowhere in the world outside of Yemen where you find a waiting period between Kedushin to the Chuppah. Everywhere else in the Jewish world, the chuppah and the condition are simultaneously. To the best of my knowledge, Yemen was the only exception. And that continued in Yemen until this very day. But outside of Yemen, Morocco and Turkey and all the great centers of Jewish life, Poland and Russia and Germany and France, everything moved together. It focused into one. And as I said many weeks ago, nature causes a vacuum. You just can't jump under a chuppah with a girl. It's not romantic. It's not proper. It's not balabatish. It's not nice. So what happened was, a shidduch took the place of the kedushin. The great advantage of a shidduch, or an engagement, or of a loving, the great advantage is, there's no ishut. Ishut doesn't begin until the chuppah. The original system, or the Yemenite system until today, the minute there's kedushin, she's an eshetish. And then you have a 1 year period where they don't live together, where they're not under one roof, where the man can disappear, where all these problems can develop. The greatness of engagement, if the guy disappears, so you have a broken engagement. But all of you know very well that after a broken engagement, you pick up the pieces of the broken glass, you glue them together, you start all over, and within a few months the glass is whole, you fall in love, and you marry, gesundheit, and there's no halachic problem whatsoever. And this was the greatness of the shidduch taking the place of the old concept of kedushin. This was the tremendous advantage. Now, I want to show you two shivut. If you want to see how ingrained the shidduch became, I want to show you two fascinating shivut, one an Ashkenazi and one a Sfardi, both of them from this period, and both of them show you clearly the shidduch is here to stay. First of all, and once again coming back to the Mintz family, Shelet the Shivut Mahari Mintz, not the Maran Mintz, but the Mahari Mintz, Rabbi Yehuda Mintz. He went from Germany to Padua, Italy. He was a cousin of the Maran Mintz. He lived at the end of the 1400s into the 1500s. And once again, anyone in the world named Mintz is descended from this family. It's an amazing thing. The Wild family, the Mintz family, anyone with those names. If you know Rabbi Adam Mintz, this is his yechus. And I have a feeling when you have a name Mintz or Wild, even if it isn't your yechus, you claim it anyway. No one can disprove it. You understand? The chazaker is, if a Mintz survived until today, it has to be an Urein Kol of the Maran Mintz, of the Marin Mintz. You claim the yechus. No one can disprove it. Now, I'm quoting from the Shelet Tzuvit Marin Mintz, Tshuva Bet. And again, his rabbinic Hebrew here is magnificent. But he tells the following story. He says, I want to create peace in the world. I don't want anyone to have a complaint. And I want to tell you what happened about a shidduch that was made and two witnesses came before me, and they made the following testimony, that this family got together, the families got together, they made a kinyan, and they wrote a document in front of us how Yitzchak, out of his own free will and volition, without anyone forcing him, with ben lev shalem ve nefesh chafetza ubedat miyushevet, and with my mind completely with me, hineni mareis chabibati hayekara, I get engaged. Look at the word he used, mareis, my dear girlfriend. Her name was Fiyuri, if I'm pronouncing it right. But, and it tells who her father was, and they agree that for the engagement, the father is going to give her 300 pratim. It's evidently a type of coin. And they agree that next year they're going to get married on this and this date. The chatan agrees that he will take his beloved Fiyuri under the chuppah, and the witnesses sign this document. Now, the father of the bride evidently was a very frum guy, and suddenly in the middle of his sleep, did you ever have that feeling, suddenly you go into it, you start worrying, you know, maybe I made a mistake. I know when I teach, when I give lectures, sometimes I regret so much, I said something, it may be misunderstood. In the classroom, it's not so bad, because you can always correct yourself. I always fear public lectures, because I always fear the public doesn't know what I'm talking about, and I don't have an ongoing relationship in which to explain myself, to elaborate. So sometimes I relive a lecture, and suddenly something hits me between the eyes. Wow, what I said, people misunderstand me, misinterpret me, and I feel very bad. The father suddenly felt so bad. Father didn't sleep at night. He used the Lashon Mareis, and he was very frightened that his daughter was married. Mareis, the Lashon of the Gemara, Kedushin, Eshet Ish. And he woke up, what happens if the boy disappears? We have another year to the wedding. We have so many months to the wedding. What did I do to my daughter? And he woke up in a cold sweat. And the question came to the Mari Mintz. And he writes here so beautifully, that the father is pious, the father is a good Jew, but I want the father to know, hineni megaled dati, and today they would write, hineni megaled dati v'omer dat Torah. That's the way a Rav would write today. But in those days they were more humble, more modest. Hineni megaled dati v'omer ani, that you have nothing to fear. That nowadays, the Lashon of Mureset means Meshudechet. What he did was absolutely in conformity with the minhag. And on these matters, it is, and he goes on to quote the whole question of Darshin Loshin Hedjot, you know what I'm talking about, the Gemara at the end of Bat Metzia, Sugyas Nedarim, are we Doresh Loshin Hedjot? What counts? Sophisticated language or daily usage? And he says, when it comes to Kedushin, absolutely daily usage. And in this case, where they made a shtar kishur, and they talk about a wedding in the future, he says, and this is the minhag hamakom, he says, absolutely, mureset is no more than mishudechet. And he says, ein kan beit michush klal v'klal. He says, there is no chshash whatsoever. There is no kedushin. It is only Meshudechet, and he tells the father of the bride-to-be, you have nothing to worry about, you didn't make a mistake, your daughter signed, you signed a very wonderful document for your daughter, and please have no fear about what happened. So this is one example, an amazing story, an amazing example, and you see even where you use the language Mureset, which according to the Gemara, Harek Mureset, Harek Mekudeshet, it's Eshet Ish. And here the Marimins Paskins, it is not Eshetish, it's only Mureset, it's Meshudechet, it goes with Darshan Lashon B'nai Adam. You see how much the Shidduchim Naftali have conquered the world. That even though it was a Lashon of Mureset, it's no more than Meshudechet, engaged, nothing more. One shiva, Mari Mintz. But now, watch. Fascinating. Again, the story here, the story of the Mari Mintz is nothing shocking. It's just a very firm father who suddenly started to worry, what did I do? Now, watch. We come to the Rashtam. I need my secretary here. I forget. The office will ask me who attended the class. David Schwartz, Avner Schwartz, Ruben Spalter, Jonathan Kroll, Benjamin Kraus, Zev Yitzkowitz. I have tapes of the Rav calling attendance. And I had the schut, the teacher fella, Simon Kahn, that I used to hear the Rav call his name every time there was shir, you know. And then I said, Simon, you're known with the Rav. And he evidently got all frightened that I would come down high. He said, yeah, no, I only sat there. I wasn't on the level yet to understand the Rav at that time. Chaim Hagla. Well, what's the story? Chaim Hagla, Abdul Savitsky, Menachem Linz. I guess Menachem's not in the class. Am I making that? I go on calling his name and it's a waste of my word, of my mouth. One second. Avi Savitsky, one second. Moshe, I'm sorry. I keep on calling you. I see what I'm confusing you. Avi Savitsky, is Avi here? Avi's just in the other class, okay? He's been absent many times, you're right. Moshe Sandansky, Moshe, I apologize, I kept on saying Avi, I had an Erev from Pashur here. Moshe, Ezra, Akiva, Yair, Gad, Dov Shraya, Ruvain, where is he? He's out on a date with a Midreshet Moriah girl. Robbing the cradle, or maybe with a madricha. It's with a madricha. Midreshet Moriah. Osek b'mitzvah, pato min hamitzvah. Gentlemen, he'll be sorry he wasn't here. Just to hear this jiva was worth coming to class today. Moshe. Shalom tshuvit. Again, Reb Shmuel Di Modina, we've quoted him, the famous Di Modina family. The Rashtam, in my opinion, was probably the most famous respondent of this family, quoted and re-quoted. Shelet and Shivet Maharashtam, popularly called the Rashtam. People don't say the Maharashtam or Reinu Harab. They say Shelet and Shivet Rashtam. Ebenezer Sheila Sheila Gimel. And here he tells an unbelievable story. Here already it's life at work. He tells the following story. Maisa Shahaya Kachaya, Sheruven Hayam Shudachim Leia. Ruven was engaged to Leia. Kiderech ha Shiduchim Anuagim Bizmanenu, Ze Bikinyan Ubishvua Hamura Dat Hamokam Kadosh Barachu, Shalola Kadeshi Shar Chalet, Ella Zu. And it's amazing what their form was. They were afraid to make Kadushin. But after all, the parents are worried stiff. When you'll have children, you'll know too. I had daughters. When you have daughters, you certainly worry. And you want to be sure they marry at a proper age. Because you have to understand, God made the world very unfair. If there's any taina that I have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a simple taina. A man has no biological clock. A woman, you all know what happens. Students of mine in their 30s are going out with 21-year-olds. They don't even want to entertain a girl who's any older. And what happens with a girl? She's caught up in a tremendous problem because when she's 21, she's competing against the 21-year-olds. When she's 31 and not married, she's still competing against the 21-year-olds. So you think you have problems with going to Gerusha, going to a Giyaret? Ah, yeah, this is a real problem, but that's the way God made the world. Evidently, you couldn't have children. You couldn't conceive otherwise. A woman has a biological clock ticking away. So a father worries. So when my girls are going out with a boy, I didn't rest until they got engaged. Now here, these people worried. They got engaged. But how do you know the guy will go under the chuppah with her? Maybe, you know, men are men. What can I tell you? They're not exactly the most complimentary of the human species, to put it mildly, what men are capable of doing. Even guys, I don't mean anything personal, Moshe, but even guys with big beards and whatever you call frum-looking and payas and black clothes and b'kipas surugot, I don't have to be accused of any prejudice. I mean, Men, I don't want to list out what I know of prominent Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, leaders of the Jewish people, and what they did. Ribbono Shel Olam, it fills a whole Al Chet Shechatati Lefenecha, and not even Chatoyim, that we can look at the pictures of these Chatoyim. That's compliment of Rabbi Yerucham Guralik. That was his greatest brought of all. When he wanted to give the class Musa and he wanted to tell us off, he said, that we want a Mazza with Al-Khaits that are illustrated. You understand? That's the way he used to tell us off. That we want a Mazza with Al-Khaits that are illustrated. So, men are men. I do not trust the man. A man is a Vulgate, an animal, unless proven differently. And proven differently means that he lives 50 years as a Ben Torah. Then we can talk about trusting a man. Until then, he is suspect in my eyes. Allah had come of a kamba, the poor father, so they wrote the shtar. And interesting, those of you familiar with the Sfardic Ketuvah, didn't you have that in your Ketuvah, that you had to sign an oath that you would not marry another wife because the Chemer of Rabbeinu Geshem doesn't apply? So the Sfadim put into their Ketuvah that they take an oath on Dat HaMokom that they're not going to marry another woman in addition to the wife they're marrying tonight. Did you have that in your Ketuvah? Do you remember or not? You were drunk, you didn't know what you were doing. I think you had it in your Ketuvah. I think you had it in your Ketuvah. Check. What? The Rabbanut for Sfada may have it yet. I don't know. They may have it. You got to check. It's possible. But gentlemen, here with the shidduch they had a sign. They're not going to marry anyone else. And this was the form. This was the shtar. Al dat hamokum. They swore, this is the girl I'm going to marry. I'm going to stand under the chuppah with nobody else. Only would this girl. And she had a promise, of course, but her promise is also important, but not as important to the father of the bride as the man's promise. And look what happened. And after they got engaged, the Meshudach would come into the house of her Meshudeched, and he would eat and drink with her, and they would spend money on food, on gifts. He would send her Vishalach lo Doronot Kamasat Yadovik, he got my love. Hakol kanohug bizman hazeh. And this is so beautiful, such a beautiful description of life. Listen to this carefully. They send gifts back and forth, like we do. We give a girl jewelry, the girl gives the boy jewelry, the boy would come in, she would make a nice meal for him, he was so pleased. It's a beautiful period in life. Engagement is a beautiful period in life. Everything to minhag hamakom. Not only that, v'nohagu shneihim Ahava v'achva, and their relationship was filled with love and respect. In other words, everything was going right. This is a play on the words of the Mishnah. Remember I told you, Shalom lo v'shalom la, that the couple gets along. Okay, you got to be certain that a man won't run away just to get rid of the battle axe. You know what I'm saying? That's the Mishnah. Shalom lo, shalom la, shalom b'neihim. Here, b'ahava v'achva, everything is great. And suddenly into this pastoral, idyllic scene, Le'yomim choltazik natasha l'meshudechet mecholeha ashe metaban. And the girl's grandmother took critically ill, and she was on her deathbed. Now, look what happens. This girl evidently had no mother. She was being raised by this grandmother. And the boy was worried. Evidently, this girl was a nice catch. Doesn't describe her, but for the sake of argument, she was intelligent, she was charming, she was beautiful. She was a student at Midrashit Moriah. She had a lot going for her. This boy evidently was worried that even though he had made every pledge and every commitment, and her father was around, but it seems with the grandmother's death, and she lived with the grandmother, and the grandmother watched over her, he was worried stiff that someone else would jump into the scene and grab this girl away from him. And it describes here that Biyot Hamishudechet Nisheret Yechida VeGalmuda, she's left alone and she's lonely. He was worried stiff. Yavoila Eze Mafater Viakadmeru Bikadushin. He was worried stiff. He had nightmares that some slick-talking guy, Mefater, from the Lashon Pitui, right? From the Torah, Pitui Vionis. He was worried that some slick-looking guy would come along and seduce her and say, the guy you're engaged to is too young, he's only going to marry you a year from now, marry me, I'm going to make it worth your while, you'll never regret it. And he was worried he's going to lose his beloved one. What did he do? And he went in with two other friends of his, and they went in, listen to what he planned, as if to visit the grandmother on her deathbed. And while they're visiting, he suddenly married her in front of his two witnesses. And both witnesses told the same story. Now, it says here, Ushnei Yehudim Acherim Nichnasu V'yashvu Bargaz. I don't know what that means in Argaz. In other words, they evidently waited for Leah to come back. They hid in the closet. I'll tell you what this reminded me of. I want to tell you a true story. I don't know what it means. Yashvu Bargaz. What does it mean they sat in a closet? I mean, maybe you have an interpretation. That's all I can think of, that the Argaz, evidently, it's a technical term. I've never yet seen this term in rabbinic literature before. Yashvu Bargaz. Evidently, it was a certain seat with a closet over it, and they sat there waiting. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. In 1980, Hanukkah, the KGB raided the Gemara class in Moscow. Again, it's hard for you to understand what I'm talking about. The world has changed so much. It's I'm sitting here talking about 1980, and I'm describing something that you can't even conceive of. And this went on through 86. They lived in such fear, they expected a return to the Stalin regime and the persecution of the Jew and the prisoners of Zion. Now, the Gemara class in Moscow had built up to about 20 students. And the KGB decided this is going too far, they're going to put an end to it. And it was in Arye Avivsov's house, they came in. Now, when the KGB came in, two fellas hid in the closet. Two fellas hid in the closet. And the KGB did not open the closet to search for them. They were not found. They were worried stiff. They were both in university, graduate school. They were worried stiff. They'd be knocked out of graduate school if they were found. Two fellas hid in the closet. You should know they were the only ones not taken to the station house, not warned, not recorded, not frightened. They got away. They hid in the closet. Those two fellas, both of them, of course, came in Aliyah. Both of them went, one learned in Mir for many years, one I think even learned in Brisk. Both of them used their graduate school degrees like I dance before Mao Zedong with two orangutans tonight. You follow me? That's how much they used their graduate school degrees. But both of them hid in the closet, and both of them were not discovered. Both of them, one of them is Reb Chaim Briskman, if the name means anything to you, a first-rate Talmud Chacham that learned in Mir for many years. He was one of the guys hiding in the closet. That's what I could think of. That, but it doesn't mean, it can't mean hidden, because the woman has to see the Edom. He gave the Edom, he gave it to them in front of her. And then they both tell the same story. Now again, listen to these words. I'll tell you my interpretation. I don't know whether I'm right, because we don't know the language. And they describe, Nichnas Ruvain, and he took from his pocket, Echad Tishtam, in Gimon Limonos. I don't know what it means. I think it means he took out a little basket with three beautiful lemons. And evidently in that area, a lemon, like in Russia. You know what a lemon means in Russia? A citrus fruit in Russia. The way we're heading in Israel, you know what a lemon will mean in Israel? Very shortly, we banish along, and what's happening here, you don't even know. Let's go on. If I talk about it, I'll get sick. And he went and he gave them to Leah, and he said to Leah, Zeh ani noten lach bi'ad kedushin zeh. I give you these lemons that you should marry me. And both witnesses gave exactly the same testimony. The second one also, the tashtimil ubetochel gimin lemonish. V'yomalanu zeh hatashtimil meila gimin lemonish. Ani noten leila rusati ba'ad kedushin. V'natan halemonish biyad leya v'kiblu otam. Fine. And then you won't believe your ears. Listen to this. Komu anashim v'hu lebeit leya. So people came and they went to Leah's house, and among them, for kamish atik yamin. How would we say it in modern Hebrew? Ish mevugar, ish sakein. I love this. Atik yamin, an ancient guy. Reuven might have been 14 years old, 15 years old, an old, dirty old man. Let me put it that way. Let's place him at 39 years old, a wealthy, dirty old man. He didn't bring a basket filled with three lemons. He brought a kavod, a beautiful ring, v'kidesh l'Leah, and gave Leah the ring, v'yomala, and told her, b'tabad zu t'chemi kudeshikli, k'dat Moshe v'Yisrael. And of course, a woman saw a beautiful ring, she grabbed the ring, he already said a beautiful Lashon Kedushin, b'tabad zu t'chemi kudeshikli, k'dat Moshe v'Yisrael. And gentlemen and lady, the city went into pandemonium. Here, the first husband, Reuven, is crying, Atla Shemayim, I married her. He brought two witnesses. And here, this old geezer, this dirty old man, is laughing and smiling as a young little chicken as his bride. He gave her her ring. And who the heck is this Reuven? And his Lashon Kedushin wasn't good. Mine was perfect. And he said, Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. And the city was simmering. And of course, it came to the Vashtam Halacha L'maisa. Now, I have to tell you, the Razdam here, Paskin's Halacha L'maisa, Belishim Safek, that she's married to Reuven. And he says that this is a minhag today, that we have Shidduchin, and these people had a perfect Shidduch. They got along beautifully. There was love between them. They conducted themselves the way a Meshudach and a Meshudechet should conduct themselves. Gifts went back and forth. He ate in her house. He took care of her. And therefore, when he gave her the Tishtanil with the three lemons, even if the Lashon Kedushin is not perfect, it's not exactly the Lashon we use today, but nevertheless, all of you know from the Sugyos and Kedushin, you don't need a perfect Lashon. There's no thing as a perfect Lashon. If it's the girl you're engaged to, and you give her a ring in front of two witnesses, and you say, be my sweetheart for life, you are married. And Allah had come of a kama where he says, take this tishtanul and the three lemons in it, and be married to me. Even if he didn't use the Lashon Aret Mekudeshetli, Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, nevertheless, it is obvious that that's what he had in mind. And absolutely, he brings down a tshuva from the Rashba, where a boy engaged to a girl, a Meshudach, Meshudechet, gave her a ring, and it didn't even mention Kedushin. He just said to her, be my sweetheart, be my love king, be my darling, be my sugar bun. And he didn't even say Kedushin. The Rashba paskin they marry. Allah had come of a kami here, where he says Kedushin, Allah had come of a kami says, Allah atam v'kama b'nidon d'dan the icha shiduchin, they were engaged in kol hachachot in his car, and it seems from all the proofs we brought how well they got along, how much they liked each other and appreciate each other. Kol shekein d'habi kedushin gemurin ubaruchu sheka, and he says this is what the Rashba means, and if in his case it's kedushin vaday, certainly in this case it's kedushin vaday. Hachi kvar b'dai kivin shema elu halemanim shani notein l'leia rusati b'at kedushin. It's absolutely lashon kedushin, and this old dirty geezer that came along, his giving her a ring was just like giving a ring to a married woman. And there's no way you can give a married woman a ring. In no way is the kedushin chal. There's no kedushin. She's an eshetish, and he passes la halacha 100%. Leah and Reuven can remain together, and the old man has no taina whatsoever. His plan was foiled, and you see that this young Reuven had a lot of common sense. His suspicions were not in vain, and I love that expression, ish atik yamin. Now I have to tell you. Give me 1 second, Hillel. 1 second. You want to ask a question, right? 1 second. I have to tell you, I laugh at this because I remember once at an early stage of my career in Israel when I couldn't speak Hebrew properly, so we had some sort of meeting at the Jewish Agency of Educators, and Rabbi Hurwitz was there with me, and I was speaking, and I wanted to say an old man, I said, Ish Atik. And everyone laughed at me. You know, I should have said, Isakein, Ishmavuga. I said, Ishatik. Everyone laughed at me. And now, 23, 24 years later, I am angry that they laughed at me. Because I see in the Tshuvas, the Rashdam, my Hebrew isn't so bad. Ishatik Yamin. If he can use it, why can't I get away with it? This is what he paskim lahalacha. And what do we see from the Mari Mintz and the Rashdam? That the Shidduch has conquered the world. And this is why even today, we can now be Malamed Zchut in Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael says, Ani Me'ureset, Ani Me'uras. Sudat Erusin. We can be Malamed Zchut. Their language is correct. From the point of view of the Gemara, such language means, Yair, they're married, Kedushin. From the point of view of usage today for the last 600-700 years, it means engagement, and it doesn't mean kedushin. So it means when Shalom gets engaged and he invites everybody to his Mesibat Erusin, we don't have to halachically correct this Hebrew. He writes Mesibat Erusin, and he'll write in parentheses, see the tshuva of the Mari Mintz, and see the tshuva of the Marashtam, and no one in the world can have a taina for his usage. Doshin Lashon Hedyot. Fascinating what has happened here. Hillel, what is troubling your Levi mind? Are you a Levi?
No.
The name Levinson and not a Levi. What can one do? Levinson means son of a Levi. What is it today?
Rakefet.
I don't have a copyright on it, but you got to pay. What are they? Oh, they don't charge anything today. When I changed my name, I changed my name twice. You know, changed it twice. Yeah, when I became a citizen many years ago, I became Rothkopf to Rakefet. Then I went back years later. I have a terrible problem. Any document written Rothkopf, who's Rothkopf? So I go back and they say, well, why didn't you change it to Rakefet? Why didn't you hyphen it? I say, what do you mean? I never. You should have told me. Well, you didn't ask. Anyway, but the second time I changed it back, they didn't charge me anything. In 1969, I think they charged me 5 lira, I think the price was. And I couldn't believe it. And they took out a bottle and drank a l'chaim. It was an amazing thing. They were so happy to get a citizen from America. The kid, I cried. It was so emotional for me. Took out a bottle from under it. That was in Israel yet. People cared. People knew each other. Took out a bottle. We drank a l'chaim. An American Jew is coming in Aliyah, giving up Thanksgiving Day willingly. The guy got to get drunk to understand it, to appreciate it. But many years later, I changed back from Rakefet Makaf Rothkopf. I changed back too. Today my legal name is Rakefet Dash Rothkopf. And many years later, they charged me nothing, but they didn't drink l'chaim. So I guess the 5 lira I paid back in 69 was for the l'chaim. Hello, what's your problem? Hello, Rakefet. Go ahead. Yes. Okay, please, let me teach today. Go ahead.
How can we find it? And I mean, maybe it's just because it happens to be a topic, but there seems to be a lot of girls who like to get married twice. I don't know.
Hillel. You have to understand something. Oh, you're lacking one drop of information here. A woman throughout time immemorial depended upon a man for her sustenance. It's not like today in Medreshet Maria that I face students who in a few years will be making more money than I ever saw in a year. My daughter makes more in 5 days than I make in a whole month. You understand what I'm saying? So they're different. No, this is the truth. My daughter's doing me a big favor. She's going to sub for me. So Rabbi Burgos will say to her, boy, you're terrific. He'll offer her a job. She'll laugh at Rabbi Burgos. He can't afford to pay. Well, you understand? So it's a different world today. Now let's turn the clock back. In two modern times, a woman was subject to the goodwill of the male species. So I don't blame a woman. She was like a yeshiva boy. A yeshiva boy has a principle. Whenever you're offered something, you take it. You understand? That's the principle. That's a good yeshiva boy. When I was a kid, they used to tell stories of yeshiva boys in Europe that would go from Kiddush to Kiddush, and people would say, how do they have a stomach big enough to eat so much food? So they used to say, yeshiva boy has to live with the principle, if there's food, eat, because you know where your next meal is coming from. Same thing with a girl. So please, don't blame a girl. A guy that she loves gave her a tishtanu with 3 lemons. She grabbed it for kedushin. Some old geese is offering her a ring. Grab it and worry later. Try to understand it that way. Have a little bit understanding of life. But please, do not speak negatively of the female species. no, no, please, please, don't, no. I believe that I have described it correctly. That all that was running through her head was a chance to get a nice ring. That's all. Understand? A woman had no panasa. She was totally dependent upon a man. This is why people never got divorced. This is why people were anxious to get married. This is why the Gemara says, Tav le mate of two men, le mate of almala. Again, don't take what I'm saying out of context. It may be that it's in the very basis of the human personality. I believe that too. But still, the pressure was greater on a woman. So please understand that the guy offers her a ring, you grab it. Halakhic problems, let the rabbis worry. You understand what I'm saying? Okay? That's the answer. I don't think she loved the second guy. I think she is perfectly happy with Reuven. But the Rashtam doesn't say. What the woman says is not here in the trip. I can only tell you what's here. But my imagination intuitively tells me what I'm describing to you is correct. Yes, God. No, 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 because that takes us back to Hafkat Kedushin, that no matter what you want to do, they didn't put Hafkat Kedushin. That's the other truth of the Rashbam. So the guy was not nice, he was stupid, but there were extenuating circumstances, the grandmother is dying, the old man is breathing down his back, this old geezer has his... Right, 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 so there were extenuating circumstances, so they don't whip the hell out of him. Now, what God touches upon leads me to the next point I want to make. As I close down this period, you'll understand what I'm doing. I'm closing down. I'm bringing you into the post Khmelnytsky massacres. I'm bringing you into the final period before emancipation. But I want to show you. And what else comes out of this entire period? No matter how brilliant our alum this is, no matter how innovative our minds are, no matter how smart we are, but no one will use Hafkat Kedushin Halacha L'maisa. And now I want to endure this part of our lectures this year, and I'm going to show you something amazing. A lot of food for thought. Yes, Reuven. Chacham Tzvi wasn't alive when it happened, but Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and that's exactly the case in B'nai Brak. What you're tying together was in the case of B'nai Brak I spoke about. Remember I spoke about the guy from Borough Park? That's exactly the way to solve the case then. And I refer you to the Rakafet Aharon, where you will have all the details with all the footnotes you need on that very case. Listen, that case, believe me, if not for the fact that I could footnote Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, they would have thrown me in the Cheirim 50 times over for mentioning it. You understand what I'm saying? Read the article. You'll have it in a few minutes. But you're absolutely right. You're tying together. You tie together two loose ends, like putting the tzitzit together, making the double knots. You follow me? I don't have time now, but you tie together. I'll send our lecture on it in great detail. You tie together the B'nai Brak case with how they ultimately found the solution. But I wasn't interested in showing you solutions today. I wanted to frighten you with the severity of the problem. That's more important than whether or not there is a solution. And even the solution is not all over. And it goes back to the Masham Mibrijin. Everything is there in the Rakafet Aharon. Now, I want to show you something amazing. When all is said and done, the greatest posek of this entire period, and the greatest posek until this very moment, the man by whose life we lead our lives, is Rabbi Yosef Karo, is the Machaber. When all is said and done, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Machaber, it's an amazing thing. Now, you know what's amazing about the Machaber? Look at the Beit Yosef, and then look at the Shulchan Aruch. And by the way, Professor Menachem Alon in his Mishpat Avri has tremendous material. He actually, are you familiar with it? He actually shows diagrams. He diagrams what the Beit Yosef said in the Kesef Mishnah, what he said in the Beit Yosef, and what he says in the Machaber. You know what's amazing? Sometimes he so conveniently avoided a topic. It's unbelievable. Look in to the Beit Yosef at the end of Eben Ezra, right at the end of Siman Chavchet. It's mamish right before Siman Chavchet. And you're looking, and you see at the end, he brings down all the Rishonim and the Rashbam, the contradictions in the Rashbam, and he brings down, you'll see, all the basic Rishonim who deal with Hafkat Kedushin. And he goes back and forth, and he goes into the then he goes into the German, to the Marik, to the Marie McClone, and McCologne, and when all is said and done, he brings down the entire machloket, doesn't reach a conclusion. In the Evan Ezra, you don't find one word of the Beit Yosef. Doesn't paskin it at all. So it shows you where there was a tremendous machloket, and he could not reach a decision, does not mention it at all. Takes no stand whatsoever. But here you find the great Beit Yosef, the great Machaber, who paskins every Shaila. Hafkat Kedushin, only the Ramah mentions, not the Beit Yosef. You know what's interesting? It's not the only time. You find with Karayim too, he gives you so much in the Beit Yosef. Nothing in the Machaber. Or the most burning issue of his time, the most classic example, the most burning issue of his time. The Torah world shook over this issue. No? Chiddush HaSmicha. The Rambam. Hilchat Shoftim. What's it? Perek Dalet? Halacha Yud Aleph, I believe. I'm working from memory. But anyway, the famous Rambam. Where does the Kama go? The Venir Ali. If all the Chachmei Yisrael would get together, and then at the end, you know, they would decide who to be Masmech. And the attempt was made, and you got to remember that the Mechaber was one of the Mismachim. He was literally not just taking it theoretically. He was involved. He was the heart of the issue. He was one of the Mismachim. And the Torah world shook on this issue, the Beirav versus the Rambach. I mean, what went on in this issue? The Torah world shook. And until today, how much has been written with the founding of the State of Israel? I mean, you have no idea. This is, even Rabbi Soloveitchik, even the Rebbe, even my Rebbe was greatly affected by it. I'll tell you how in a second. I think I told you, but I'll repeat it again in context. But you know what's amazing? Do you find one word in the Mechaber about this issue? See, it's an amazing thing that he took no stand. I mean, logically speaking, Choshen Mishpat, the heart of Choshen Mishpat evolves around this issue. If you have Smuchim, you have Knesset, you have Mumchim. So much of the halacha changes if you have Smuchim. And the ability to be Mechadesh Smuchim, what this means as far as Malkot and Dinei Nefashot, I mean, and the whole inferences for eschatological inferences. And here a Machloket that shook the world took no stand in the Shulchan Aruch. It shows you that he himself was in doubt. And the same thing with Hafkat Kedushin. Once again, with all that he brings down in the Beit Yosef, you know, a wise guy can say, but the Machaber brings down, he quotes this and he quotes that, maybe he's not to Lahakel, maybe he's not that you can do it. There's not one word in the Shulchan Aruch, and that proves to me, even he was hesitant. No one in the world that I know of, from the later Rishonim into the early Achronim, whether they were Svadim, who were generally much greater Mekilim at this time, or whether they were Ashkenazim, you don't have one posek in the world who is willing lafkei kedushin halacha lemaisa. And I'll tell you how it affected the Rav. And this is the truth. I've said it many times, and you might as well know. Everyone asked that foolish question, why didn't the Rav visit Israel? It's a foolish question because people are caught up in life. It's like asking why the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't leave 770 Eastern Parkway for some 30 years. It's a fact. The Rebbe never left Eastern Parkway. For endless years, didn't budge. He walked from his house to 770, 770 back to his house many hours later. That was the sole extent of the Rebbe. Sometimes, if there was a funeral, he walked behind the coffin. Sometimes a funeral, he went to the Leviathan. Sometimes. The big Gabayim, there were certain people. But it's a foolish question. A person gets caught up in a certain lifestyle. Why the Rebbe didn't visit it? Okay, but now let's ask, why didn't the Rebbe visit it? Well, I'll tell you, the answer is very simple. Because the Rav could not deal with his family here. That's the heart of the answer. When Heichal Shlomo was built, if you've ever gone on a tour of Heichal Shlomo, the room where the chief rabbinate council sits, where the Dayanim, the Beit HaGadol used to sit before it moved to the Old City, in the room where the Beit HaGadol used to sit, it's an Agan Soha. semicircle, room for a Beit Din HaGadol, room for Sanhedrin. Everyone can see each other. You've learned the Gemara in Sanhedrin, right? That's a narrative Gemara that you have to see each other. Eye contact is extremely important. It's crucially important at times. What a magnificent description. No? The Briska family, you're building a Heichal Shlomo, you're building a Gan Soha, you're building a room for Sanhedrin, the Zionist state. I don't have to quote you from Rabbi Moshe Shapiro. Everything is blamed upon the Zionist and the Zionist, and you're going to reestablish a Sanhedrin? Chas v'chalila, forbidden to enter Heichal Shlomo. And you have to understand, could you picture the Rav coming, the great Mizrahi leader, perhaps the greatest Mizrahi theologian in the post-World War II period, perhaps the greatest Mizrahi theologian in the post-World War II period, he's coming, and he's not going to give a public shiur in Heichal Shlomo? Can you picture that? Remember, there was no great synagogue. Today would be in the great synagogue. The crowd would be overwhelming. And on the other hand, could you picture that the Rav, the Briska, with all his loyalty to his uncle, blood is mud, the blood relationship is thicker than mud, with all their differences in Hashkafa, the man who gave the unbelievable chesed, Mardo Dime Dodeichan, the Briska Rav, which Rabbaran Lichtenstein continues, the apex of the Rav's thinking, I differ. I feel, if you pardon me, I don't want to differ with Rabbaran, but I feel I have a right to differ. I feel a chesed for Reb Chaim Heller is even more important. I feel with that plate that's Sofrehim, the hesped on the Briska Rav is the heart of risk, but the hesped on Reb Chaim Heller is the heart of Yiddishkeit. And that's the basis of our existence, the basis of our sitting here, the basis of our learning Torah, and I differ with Aaron Lichtenstein on that. It's the basis of Yiddishkeit. The hesped on Reb Chaim Heller has the basis of Yiddishkeit. On the Briska Rav is the basis of Brisk. It's true. What he achieved there, an analyzed member of Yeruchim Gerelik, the old Briska, they were going crazy. They wanted to kiss the Rav. Rabbi Yeruchim said to me, no one ever said it like the Rav. This is Briska, the nail on the head. They couldn't get over it, because the Rav, after all, when all is said and done, how much did he know of Brisk? He never lived in Brisk. He only saw Rav Chaim a few times in his life, you understand? That's what people don't realize. How many times did he see Rav Velvo? And yet he totally had Brisk. It's the heart of Brisk. But the Hesper Reb Chaim Heller is the heart of Yiddishkeit, Platon Sofrehem. And the Rav, how can he come and slap the Briska Rav's face? How can he come and slap his first cousin, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi, the father of Reverend Yeshua today, who's the latest Briska, who's the great Briska today? This was Rav Yosef Dov. It was a first cousin. It was Rav Velvel's eldest son. He was the biggest lam. He died fairly young. He died in the 60s, and I believe it was 1981. And there were big rumors then. I remember, did you hear who died? Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, people calling. So I remember I called Tova. I said, Tova, how are you? You know, she said, Aaron, she said, I know, you're not calling about the weather. You're calling because you heard the rumor. It's not my father. It's my cousin. You follow me? Imagine how many calls she got. But she was nice. You know, instead of being angry, she understood. And I didn't want to come out and ask. So I said, how are you, Tova? You know, how are you? How are you? I'm asking about the weather. But she understood. She got a lot of calls. But this is why the Rav couldn't come. And you know what's amazing? That the Machaber, think what I'm telling you, the man who is the most intimately involved, if you're going to ask me anyone, who is most intimately involved, one of the Chiddush HaSmicha, it's the Machaber. All eyes fell on him. They wanted, there were four Mismachim, he was one of them. Never did he say a word about it. It's amazing. And the same thing is with Afkad Kedusha, and that's why I feel very firmly, when he was in doubt, he didn't put into the Shulchan Aruch. Here, he had no opinion. He held off because, obviously, Suffolk, the writer, you have to be Machmir. And that means he was not in favor of Hafkat Kedushin, Halach Lamaisa, with all that he said in the Beit Yosef. David, what did you want to ask?
In general, the Chaver has two different sides of the issue. We'll say Yeshua is there, Yeshua is there. We'll leave it there out. We'll say that it's simple, that it doesn't work.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It may not be simple that it doesn't work, but he didn't want to even take a stand. It was too filled. No, yes, silence is a stand. Lachumra. Lachumra. That's exactly what I'm saying. But I'm calling your attention that he could deal with it in the Beit Yosef, but he didn't deal with it in the Shulchan Aruch, because there he paskened what he was clear on. Even if the Yeshua was, at least he knew which way to go. Here, he pushed didn't want to get involved at all. Otherwise, I have no way of explaining it, because it can't be by chance that he left out such major issues that he discusses in the Beit Yosef. You understand? Okay, that's exactly it. And the raya from Chiddush HaSmicha is an amazing story. He left it out. Gentlemen, halacha l'maisa, what do we see? We see that by the time we've reached the end of the 17th century, the 18th century, Shidduchim had conquered the world. That is the Mari, that is the Mari Mintz, that is the Masham. We see that no one ever tried Hafkad Kedushin, even the Machaba, with all that he said in the Beit Yosef, did not mention, did not try Hafkad Kedushin. What else did we see today? Very fascinating. How do you know someone is dead? And this is a problem that haunts us until today. Imagine Rabbi Yaakov Venden starts his autobiography, how he could have been a mamsa, how his grandmother or great-grandmother had gotten a heta, was about to remarry. It's a very dramatic description. And the first husband comes back. And this is Maisin B'chol Yom. You can give testimony. A guy is lying in a pile of dead bodies. It happened during the Holocaust. He walks away. No one knows it. Now, let me tell you the following about Tuesday. Tuesday's shiur will end off the 4 weeks we have done on this magnificent piece, the Tanya Soloveitchik Memorial Lecture in 1970. In addition, the first part of the shiur will introduce a good deal of the tape that we will hear in the next class on the Rav, which will the next class that will follow this Tuesday's class. Now, very important to hear the introduction. Number three, I have here copies of Rakafat Aharon. I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm able to give them as gifts to my students. All I ask when you take it is that if someday you're in a position to give tzedakah, to help raise tzedakah, remember Shvat Ami, because I have a feeling the problem of the spiritual absorption of Russian Jewry is going to be with us, fortunately or unfortunately, for many decades to come. And without being a big prophet, I can tell you very simply that the spiritual state of the state of Israel depends on the absorption of Russian Jewry. Unfortunately, with every Jew from Yemen and every Jew from Syria coming here, it doesn't bring more than another 10,000 Jews. Halavai, that many. But with Russian Jewry, half Jews, quarter Jews, the law of return, 1/8 Jews, lo aleinu, there can be, I'm referring to the goyim that are going to be coming here, there can be goyim alone, I would estimate, within our lifetime, 1 million non-Jews or semi-Jews coming from Russia. The Jews coming, there can be another 2 million coming, out of whom many, the overwhelming majority, will know nothing about Yiddishkeit. Now, if anyone wants a copy of the Rakafat Aharon, just step up to my desk and I'll be happy to give you a copy. Thank you very much. Das Vedanya.